And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
Yes, and I am Jeremy Heide.
Yes, oh. He did it, yes. Finally.
Cut. Yes, I didn't have to like lead him in. That's awesome.
Yeah, good job.
Yes. I have to apologize. I was channeling my inner Dr. Horrible a few minutes ago, but I'm better now.
Yay.
But you have to embody a different persona as we're going through all these voicemails, I think.
Oh, okay.
Or am I wrong? Or is
You say embody a different personality?
Because sometimes someone will say something in a voicemail, yeah. And you'll argue a point.
Yeah.
And then when we're listening back later, like when the episode actually hits the feed or when I'm editing, I'll realize, wait, didn't I argue that opposite point like 6 months ago?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
So.
Yeah.
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 Sometimes. That hasn't happened often. Not often. But every now and then I'll just go, wait, what did I did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
I did, didn't I?
Sometimes. Yeah. But, so we're going to continue our Feedback-a-palooza extravaganza double grande.
Yeah.
I have to find, I don't drink Starbucks, so I don't know what the good names are of the, you know, the $22 cups of coffee that they sell. So somebody send me in a good name and I'll use it.
There we go. Well, let's start off here. Let's finish the email that Joe Carfley had sent to us.
Okay.
That I broke into two because he had great points and I wanted to be able to really allow us to discuss it and think about it. So to continue, these were some of his issues that he wanted to address if there had been a second season of Crusade. So he goes on the next part, the fake cure versus the real cure. In the Crusade books Cafe Press is putting out, they talk about that a faux cure would be found in season 2. It would save humanity, but it's a short-term effect, thus lowering the blockade, which will then allow it to spread everywhere. Excalibur would go rogue finding the real cure. I like the idea of finding the cure early on so we can move on. We all know the cure is found. Franklin and Earth look fine, sleeping in light. We also know JMS was not a fan of the plague idea. So I am thinking we would get another big bad that the crew had. Oh, so I'm thinking we would get a cure by season 3. Then what is left for the show to do? My thinking is by season 2 or 3, we would have introduced the hand that we saw in The Legend of the Rangers. We get another big bad that the crew has to contend with. They may have the cure or maybe stopping them from getting the cure. Either way, I'm thinking that we get them in or something like them due to the fact that the plague is too big for the series not to deal with.
Hmm.
I will readily admit that my attention span these days has been severely hampered with a number of things that are happening in my life. So I don't know that when I read stuff, I necessarily grasp fully what I read. But I don't recall that there was what Joe postulates here, or what he was reading, is that there would be early on a cure would be found. But it was a short-term effect. The only effect it would have was with that the blockade around Earth would be dropped, allowing humanity to return to the stars. But then that basically spreads the Drac plague everywhere.
I don't remember reading it anywhere.
I don't. Okay, I just want to make sure that was something that I didn't miss, because I don't think that's true. I think as I recall, the idea is that they would find the cure in season 2 or 3. But what they would find out is that there were elements within EarthGov that had vested interest in keeping the cure under wraps for whatever reason.
Right. That's what I recall. That there was an ulterior motive. You know,
that would be a great argument for all the other races, though, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not really cured.
Yeah. Interesting. Because I'm trying to think. When did? Yeah, because I believe they use that same thing in V for Vendetta. You know, what happens if the worst terrorist attack on the country was done by your own government, kind of thing.
Right.
You know, this was done by an outside force, but factions in the government had a vested interest in keeping the most of the population under their control for whatever right. reason. You know, so like, yeah, we've got the cure to cure us, but you know, the rest of you, we're going to hold here, which in a way doesn't make a whole lot of sense because in 5 years they'd all be dead. So I'd have to think they would draw it out as long as they could, but then slowly trickle out. Maybe it was a financial thing, you know.
That's what I'm thinking. I think it's a matter of
making
business.
making it a treatment instead of an actual cure.
Right. You know, or something. Well, you know, yes, a treatment similar to what we see with the drug in
The
telepath drug, right?
Yeah. Where they administer it, but in order to stay alive, you have to keep taking the antidote.
Right. Exactly.
Wow, I didn't even think of that one.
That's what I'm thinking would have ended up with something to that effect. Then that's what keeps people under control. We, you know, and they don't tell them. It's like, well, this is the best we can find for the cure. So, and then people will, whether they feel. Whether they recognize a plot or not, they will feel that they have no choice except to go along with whatever the plot is. And that's what the
And what's really cracking me up now is there was a Next Generation episode like this, wasn't there? Remember the two planets? Like the one planet had the plague and the other planet was selling the drug for the plague.
It wasn't a plague, they were just stoners.
Yeah, exactly. They were just high. They weren't they weren't sick. They were just
stoned, man.
They were toasted.
Yeah. Now that leads to Joe's other sub point in there is I don't think we would have seen the hand in Crusade. I think that all of Crusade would have been dealt with dealing with finding the cure to the plague and the fallout of discovering a plot surrounding the cure. And that would have been the Crusade story.
Okay.
You know, the hand I think is clearly JMS is trying to come up with some action adventure scheme for Legend of the Rangers. But that's a whole other conversation right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm gonna leave one more point here from Joe.
Okay.
The Babylon 5 cast. I do think we would have seen more stunt casting. Sorry. I also think that if a cast change for Captain was made, it wouldn't shock me to see Claudia Christian back in the chair. There needed to be more bridging of the gap between Crusade and B5. You can only cameo people for so long till people want to see the characters long term. It's always been a theory of mine that you need to carry at least two original cast members or a storyline into a spinoff. Crusade's big problem is Lockley's character couldn't fit that role. If anything else, we would have gotten a Ranger as a cast member, maybe a Marcus clone or a super serious Minbari, but they needed to have another link to the Babylon 5. Crusade just felt like a different show. The ship was new, the cast was fairly new, and even the problems were new. It's weird to say, but it was too new that it was just another sci-fi show with B5 on the title. They needed more connection to the B5. I think Ivanova or Lanier, if he didn't buy it in the Psycor War. Those would have been logical choices.
I can agree with that a little bit. At least the first part.
Yeah, I see his point, but the whole point of Crusade, for bad or for good, was that TNT wanted to break from Babylon 5 and create something totally new. But that was still familiar enough that the Babylon 5 fans would follow it. So there literally was a double sword of Damocles that JMS was working with.
And from what I recall reading in one of the Cafe Press books, there wasn't going to, because TNT was so adamant of establishing a show in the Babylon 5 universe that had nothing to do with Babylon 5. The only reason we got Lockley is that, if I recall the story correctly, there was a TNT executive who ended up at some event and was seated at a table or on a skybox or something with Tracy Scoggins and was so smitten with her. The TNT guy said, well, she needs to be on this new show. So, well, what is it, guys? Do you not want any connection to Babylon 5? Because if you're bringing her in, it's basically she is the connection to Babylon 5. So, yeah. I, it's one of those.
And the thing is like she would be the one to make the connection because she's the captain of the station. We know she's the captain of the station for another 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And so, and having the Excalibur return to Babylon 5 now and again for supply, for R&R, for the crew of the ship, for information gathering and sharing. It makes logical sense that you'd send them back to Babylon 5 every, I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes.
Yep, I agree. And I thought the chemistry she had between Scoggins and Cole was actually very good.
Especially in the shower.
Yes. But that scene, but all the scenes before that when they were down below and they were getting the whatever they were eating from the whatever card and just all that you know.
They are both used to being in command.
Yeah.
They are both used to being the ones running the mind games. So they play off each other very well.
Yeah, what is it in the Ruling from the Tomb? Where Lockley basically says something, I don't know if you're, you know, something like regularly handsome or infuriating. He goes, why can't I be both? You know, but it was just like, it was, but the actors really made that come alive. I mean, it's funny dialogue, but you watch them play it off and none of it feels out of character at any level of it. I mean, that's so. Lockley is in stunt casting because, as you just pointed out, Summer, it makes sense in terms of the mission for Excalibur and just the overall charter of what the station would be.
Now, whether or not we got another ranger to be a semi-regular, I could see that too. You know, you'd have one ship or
he's
one.
He's the
ranger.
Guy who takes the single seated flyer out and doing, you know, saying, "Hey, we need to go check this out. I found this or whatever." Yeah. Which ties back into what JMS's original concept for a B5 spinoff was, which was not quite Legends of the Rangers, but it was sort of, tied into the Plague. But the whole idea really was more Rangers out doing whatever, and then the Excalibur would be sent in to follow up. We saw a little bit of that on occasion in Crusade, but not like what I think my sense of what the original premise was supposed to be.
Okay.
Now, the one last thing I would say here, it would completely shock me to see Claudia Christian back in the chair.
Oh, yeah. That wouldn't happen. That just wouldn't happen.
But, you know, it would have been awesome if it had happened. I think they could have worked it in there.
But the issue with that isn't... the issue there is real world in the way that Claudia Christian left Babylon 5.
Right. No, I mean, what if? As a what if, it would have been pretty cool.
Oh, sure. As a what if, it would have been really, really cool. But it's not even as good a what if Spider-Man was Hitler kind of what if.
The only way I could see that even remotely working is if Excalibur runs into her deep space exploration ship on the same planet for some reason.
Well, it comes back to Joe's original, one of his original points from last time was that he felt that Gideon was a goner, that character was out. And so in that case, if you're going to replace him, why not with someone like Claudia Christian?
Right. I wouldn't want to replace Gideon with Ivanova on that ship, on that mission. It doesn't feel right, you know?
No, I agree. I don't think she's the proper person for that.
Okay. Let's mull that over and take a really quick break and come back with more voicemails.
Yay.
Critical Myth Podcast. An enlightening look at the best of genre television and its role as our modern mythology. A scholarly, in-depth discussion of story and its ability to reveal every facet of the human condition.
Look at that. There's some guy who's oozing.
I'm creating some not-so-good words.
Stranger in a Strange Land? Yeah, that was the point.
Yeah, not good, not good.
But I was going to say blasphemy, but okay.
The whole blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, shame that musical episode of The Wire got canned.
You know, oh, that's what the damn picture was.
Well, they could have showed me a box with a few wires out, and I think I would have bought it more.
There's a monster. Yeah. And there you go. What in the name of hell are we dealing with here?
The Critical Myth Podcast.
At criticalmyth.com. We're now on iTunes.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from Tucson. Actually, I'm in beautiful Phoenix, and I went to a very popular chain of used bookstores to get a book while I'm visiting, and guess what? I found out the fate of Jakar and Lita after the end of the series. They wound up as action figures in the used bookstore. So after thinking for a moment, I don't think Phoenix is a good place for them, so I decided to take them down to the beautiful Sonora Desert in Tucson for them to enjoy some warmth and greenery. The only problem is I just don't think I have any room for them, if you know what I mean. Oh well. Hope to hear from you guys sometime. Bye-bye.
Nice.
Did you take them by the crater? That's where you need to take them. But, well, oh boy, as big of a hole as that is, imagine what the scale is for Jakar and Lita action figures.
Well, the crater's in central Arizona. Phoenix is in, I should say the crater's in northern Arizona. Phoenix is in central Arizona and Tucson's south Arizona. So he was going the opposite direction. He was running away from the meteor crater with Jakar and Lita. And wow, does that sound like a road trip movie or what?
Yes, but by the same token,
where's
the universe
Winslet?
Is curved and he would have ended up back where he started. So trying to run away, he would have eventually ran toward.
Well, if you're in Phoenix, you go north towards Flagstaff, but you bear east towards a painted desert and you'll hit Winslow. So he must have found those toys at Bookman's.
Mystery solved.
Well,
and I'm glad that they went to a good home. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. The Bookman's, there's a Bookman's in Mesa. There's one in Phoenix. There's one or two in Flagstaff. And I think two or three in Tucson. And they are awesome. They are awesome stores. The collection of science fiction and mystery thrillers is incredible. There are, you know how you go into a used bookstore and sometimes the collection of older sci-fi is hit or miss?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that problem here. I mean, there's literally, you've got old Fritz Leiber novels sitting right next to newer, like Jennifer Fallon or somebody. Like, oh, just, wow. It's all really alphabetical order. And you know, the older, remember the Dell sci-fis with the yellow binding, the yellow binding on the side where it's like just plain yellow and with the black lettering and the really 60s and 70s artwork on them?
Yes.
All over the place. Great stuff.
Yes.
And they are the ones, they sell toys. They sell toys and games and musical instruments too. And that's the only bookstore I can think of that would have had Babylon 5 toys. Interesting. Luckily, I have managed to avoid buying any of the action figures, and I will keep it that way.
How are we going to make the stop motion animation picture if you don't buy all the
that
stuff?
Right.
I will let someone else buy them.
We'll just direct the actors.
There you go.
This is Gary, and I just wanted to mention something that I ran across in my email, mentoring, I guess would be the best way to put it, the Chronology book. They've also announced that they will be ending its production, I believe, by the end of March. So if you're interested, it's definitely something to look at. It is a little bit of a geeky fan type of production. It might not appeal to the average person, but if you're listening to this show, chances are you're not the average watch viewer of Babylon 5. You're a little bit more diehard. I wish they had made this earlier on. I can only imagine so many arguments that I might have been able to beat Tim on had I a resource like this to go to. So if everybody goes over to, I think it's v5books.com, and take a look. I know for the first week or two, if this makes it out in time, they do offer a discount. And if not, it's still a pretty good deal. It really meshes together a whole bunch of stuff, even unproduced scripts. So if you hadn't picked it up before, you might want to look at it. And even if you don't buy it, go to the website to take a look. It has the coolest picture of, why am I blanking out on the name? Tim, save me. The most ancient one.
Lorien.
I'll just go. And it's got the picture of the really old guy that saved Sheridan's life.
Lorien.
Wait. There's a follow-up. Here's the follow-up.
Oh, jeez, it was Lorien. Oh, I forget that. Oh, gosh. Lorien. Anyway, the newer version of the Chronology has a really cool hand-drawn picture of Lorien. So hop over to the site and take a look at it. Even if you don't buy the book, it's really cool to see. Bye.
That was too funny.
And for the people that are watching, I put a picture up of the Chronologies book I just bought.
Nice.
It has the picture of Lorien on it. So
I'm going to have to go grab that cover image just so I have like completeness on the Lurker's Guide website, because my copy is the green copy. And for people who are listening, we are actually recording this on February 29th.
Yes.
The last day the Chronologies will be on sale is February 29th.
Yeah, we're sorry, guys.
Yes, we are so sorry. Oh, goodness gracious. Both the green and the white versions will be gone forever on February 29th.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Hello, everybody listening to Show 255 with the Darina treatment. And it really shows that, even before the show was canceled, it didn't seem that they were getting enough support, or they didn't have the right contracts, I guess, for the actors, because for that second show, they were only going to have two of the actors there, so it really did not sound all that great episode, but I think it's really hard to say what would have happened had they actually been able to go ahead and JMS would have finished getting it all fleshed out and so forth. But all the more the tragedy of Crusade, and I guess we should just be happy with what other taste that we get through the other voices, and then through the eventual what the hell happened volume. That's all for tomorrow.
If we get any more What the Hell Happened volumes, I don't know if anybody else has noticed that stream of books seems to have dried up fairly quickly.
Oh, Tim.
Yeah, Jeremy and I just kind of found out something why. Neil was disseminating the news about February 29th being the last day for the Chronologies book. He said, oh, and there's new news coming March 14th. And both of us went, huh, what? Apparently, we're getting an entirely brand new 6-volume Babylon 5 book series. Quoting, this 6-volume series will give fans an experience of Babylon 5 they've never had before. It's all fresh material never published before by B5 Books, starting on March 14th.
I feel like a little schoolgirl.
So now I think we know what Jason's been busy with.
Yep.
Time out. We lost him.
Oh, damn it. It's the worst time. Oh, man.
Okay.
Tim's going, what? What? What happened? What? What?
Oh, this is awesome.
Oh, man. He's back on.
Okay.
Come back here.
Okay. Oh. This is what happened.
Uh-huh.
This is exactly how it sounded. Jeremy and I saw Neil on the conference. We announced that the book was ending on the 29th, and that... And I'm like, what? What? I know it was. It was like a conspiracy to think you had been silenced before the big revelation. It was... I'm like, what?
Oh,
just
learned
something very important.
And
what we learned is...
What we were saying before you were so rudely interrupted was that March 14th is going to start an all-new Babylon 5 book series. A new, quoting, this six-volume series will give fans an experience of Babylon 5 they've never had before. It's all fresh material, never published before by B5 Books. Now we know what Jason's been busy on.
Ah, very good.
So we get the chronologies will be archived forever today, February 29th. But on March 14th, we get a new series that I'm probably going to have to get.
Yep. Yep.
And now I have to wait 2 weeks to find out what it is because I have no idea. And I'm dying.
The mind reels.
I'm dying. What could possibly they have dug up that we've never seen before? I wonder if he found his notes that he lost at Blackpool.
Oh, that would be so awesome. That would be amazing.
That would be something else, wouldn't it?
Dude, talk about the whole
thing. Knowing Jason, the last few times that he's teased us with things like that, we're going to have to get him back on to tease us some more. But
you know, that's a good idea.
We've always been wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, March 14th is a Wednesday. I think we have to kind of have to have Jason on here, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Going to have to work on that.
Yes.
All right, next voicemail.
This is Neil from Bowie listening to show 256, going over the end of the line, which, was just an amazing script, and just it was very frustrating. I remember reading it, and, well, frustrating in that the interface that we're given, this book-based thing, was absolutely terrible to read it back then when introduced to us. But then also frustrating is that we were left with this cliffhanger, which we knew we'd just want to find out about. I'm looking forward to seeing it in whatever volume, what the hell happened, that it appears eventually, but just shows more of the tragedy of Crusade, that we were deprived that. It would be interesting to go back to the Babylon 5 moderated group and see some of the comments that people were saying at the time that this was available on the net, what some of those comments were. Anyway, I'll just take a look at that sometime. That's all.
Okay.
We were supposed to get a total of 4 What the Hell Happens, right?
I don't know what the number was. I just knew we were supposed to get What the Hell Happens that was going to finally reveal the total story of what went wrong.
I have no idea.
I wonder if those led into finding more stuff on Babylon 5.
It's possible, but I for some reason I have 4 stuck in my head for Crusade.
Yeah, I don't know.
For the What the Hell Happened, anyway.
We'll have to ask Jason when he gets on here.
Yeah.
We will.
This is is Nelson Bowie listening to the end of show 256, where Summer's thinking about what to do with the novel. And I think the Shadow Within and To Dream in the City of Sorrows, those together or even separately might be good good shows. And then you could have another show which has the other seven of the novels, just hitting a few minutes on each, possibly. That would probably do it. Anyway, that's a thought.
We are reaching the point where we need to really make plans about
plans for the novels.
This. Yeah. Yeah, because one of the things that we've talked about, the fact is that unlike, you know, carving out an hour to watch the show and being ready to discuss it, it takes a little more time to prep for the novels. So
I found another of the not rare Centauri Prime books if anyone needs them.
Umi.
Yeah, there you go.
You need the Centauri books?
I need some of them.
Okay. Where'd he go?
I don't know.
He went to look
at it. I'm looking at my books.
Okay. No,
I can't find any Centauri books. I thought I had one, but I guess I don't.
Hmm. Well, make a note and send them to me, which you need.
There you go. Summer will take care of you.
Can do.
Hello, it's Nephew Bowie. Listen to the end of show 256, and Summer mentioned her binder of the trading cards. So I just have to wonder how many of those trading cards did Summer have personally signed by some of the actors there. So, you know, saw him at convention for so, and as opposed to arrive signed. That's all.
I was never at a convention where Babylon 5 cast appeared where I could have gotten them to sign anything. If I had been, I would have had them sign covers of the magazine, the Babylon 5 magazine, where they featured, where they were featured on the cover.
Right.
As for signed cards, I did get signed cards out of... Actually, I don't think I bought a whole lot of boxes of cards for season one and season two because they had already been out and were rare by the time I figured out that they were there and I needed them.
Right.
But the season... I think the season four and the season five cards... The card I don't have is the one of Kosh and Lita. Where Lita's like tippy toeing and kissing the Kosh head. Yeah. I don't have that one. I need to have that one. I do have the Penn and Teller one. I do have number one. I do have Harlan Ellison. I have Doug Copeland. I have believe it or not, I have Richard Biggs and Jeff Conaway.
Ooh.
And Jerry Doyle. I never got the Bruce Boxleitner. I never got the Mira Furlan. I have number one and I have Dodger. Marjorie Monaghan and Marie...
Marshall,
yes. Two other people who I have not been able to track down to see if they'd come on the show to talk to us about their roles.
Yes, right?
Tried for a year and a half to get Marjorie Monaghan on. No dice. I think she went like Ed Wasser, just went out of acting and into other stuff.
Right.
But yeah, those are the ones that I pulled signed from the box or bought online or at a con because they were there. I think I actually had to buy the Harlan Ellison one because I was gonna go broke trying if I can't buy in boxes.
Yeah, right.
Of that set. I don't think I ever, no, I never got the JMS one, but I got the Harlan one and went, I said, okay, we're good.
Hello, Babcasters. It's Edmund from Greenville. Just wanted to send along a couple of thoughts, looking back on the Lost Tales all these years later. I think at the time, we were all aware that they weren't giving him any money, but we were all hopeful that this was just the start of a whole series of movies, so we were willing to cut them a little slack. However, now that we know what's actually happened, what I will never forgive Warner Brothers for, especially if this is the last time we see Babylon 5 on video, is not getting a chance to see Sheridan one more time walking onto the Zocalo to the cheering crowds for the 10th anniversary. Just hearing it in the background just ain't quite the same thing. Be seeing you.
Yeah, they're... As much as I really think that from a story standpoint and a writing standpoint, that the over there tale with Sheridan and Kinsfinari and Galen is very strong, there are those moments where you know that they're fighting against the budget. That's one of them, obviously, where Ventari and Sheridan are flying Star Furies, and because they're not going into combat, they don't have to wear spacesuits. Well, that's, you know, that's just sort of covering up the fact that they didn't have any money in the budget to build spacesuits, you know? And it's like, you know, even then, I understood why it was there, even if I didn't buy it. And Edmund's right. You know, I do remember that feeling.
I don't know. It's, in a way, I feel like we kind of got gypped. Like at the end of Enterprise, we didn't hear Archer's, you know, historic speech at all. And so this moment, we didn't get to see the Zocalo.
Right.
We just got to hear it off stage. I understand the budgetary reasons for that. And I may not like it. And yeah, it would have been nice to see the sets done. Totally digital, completely revamped with all the people applauding his return. But I wonder if that would have made it worse, because we would have seen what the newer hardware, the newer software could have designed for the Babylon 5 interiors. And we would have said, wow, I wish they could go back and do the regular series with that kind of stuff. And I think it would have made it worse for me as a fan. If they leave it to my imagination can rebuild it just like what I saw on seasons 1 through 5. If they gave me something new and glorious, I would just cry.
Well, I would say, you know, there's the interior shot that they had of the docking bay,
which looked 5 times bigger than anything we saw.
Right, but it also took longer to be able to read that. Even now, going back and watching it, having watched it a dozen times over the years or whatever, it still takes me a moment to find where the live action figures are, because there's something kind of skewed about the perspective. And yes, I understand it's the inner curvature of a curved surface, but that's not it. It's how the live action element is actually composited into that background and the establishing shots, that to me, the perspective isn't quite right. Now, when they're doing the close-ups or the medium shots of characters talking, well, then it's a different matter and the backgrounds look okay. But that to me it's just like they didn't quite, whether they didn't have the time or what it was, it just didn't quite read like I think they wanted to read it, and at least in my mind.
Okay.
But I'm with you. I mean, and as Edmund says, if this had been the first in a string of stories, I would have been happy, you know, even if it's flawless. But it's all we ended up getting. And it just really feel like Warner's kind of half-assed it, you know. Let's put it out there, see if anybody bites, and if they bottle. And I think that we just talked about it at the time. It was Warner. They knew they were going to sell it because they had this fanatic fan base for the show. So let's see what happens if we do this direct-to-home video thing. How well is it going to do? And it did well. And so they figure. I guess they can figure they can do it for other shows. I don't know.
Well, that's just it. By their count, they didn't do well, and they only have themselves to blame. And believe it or not, I can use Miami Vice as an example. NBC Universal held the release of Miami Vice on DVD 3 to 4 years longer so they could do it right, because they knew if they released, they saw the fiasco that was the WKRP in Cincinnati release. It wasn't them.
Yeah.
It was somebody else. But releasing WKRP in Cincinnati without the music, it's an unwatchable series.
Yep.
So NBC Universal took the time and spent the money to get the clearances for all 5 seasons of Miami Vice.
Oh, wow.
And it sold like wildfire.
Sure.
Some stores couldn't keep them on the shelves when it first came out. So NBC Universal knows how to sell their stuff on DVD. Warner Brothers is still learning. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a really quick break because we have one more voicemail and a very special surprise from a Babylon 5 fan.
Yeah.
And it's just, you have to see it. It's funny.
So, you're still hanging on to that tiny thread of denial, trying to convince yourself that sci-fi has nothing whatsoever to do with your life. Well, you better think again, Sparky. That tiny cell phone has no basis in Starfleet communicators. Those hands-free earpieces now used by virtually everybody didn't come down from the ear of Lieutenant Uhura. And that cute little Rumba vacuum cleaner that you use far too infrequently wasn't hijacked off an Imperial Star Cruiser. Nah, not a chance. Because if it were true, then you would be forced to turn on that Flash Gordon-inspired box on your desk called a computer and listen to sliceofsci-fi.com, the Pexim satellite radio show that will turn your sci-fi into reality.
Hello, Babcasters. It's Edmund from Greenville. As you were discussing the lost tale, something occurred to me. We all know that JMS liked having trapdoors and multiple paths for his characters, and it occurred to me that having Ventari adopted by John and Delenn, and being with, most importantly, David, might have been a way down the road for David's dash to Centauri Prime to be masked and just seen as something else, that he was just going to visit his old friend Ventari and his family, something like that. So the true import wouldn't actually sink in all at once. Wondering what you think of that. Be seeing you.
I think that was the plan.
Yeah. They're clearly, and knowing JMS's ability with misdirection, there was more story there. We'll never know. I mean, that's just
true.
The long and the short of it. We're just never going to know.
Yeah, but I that you can interpret Sheridan's reaction to saying, you know, come with us, you know, on Minbar. You won't have to worry about anything. The simplistic way to describe that is think of it as he was socializing a stray puppy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or a stray kitten. You know, it's not quite irretrievably feral yet.
Right.
You still have some work to do.
Yes. Yes. And you see that, I think, in Keegan McIntosh's performance. There's, he turns, he's this eager young kid who's excited about being on the ship with this sneer on the lip, like, oh, this is so inferior to what the Centauri Republic has. And it was all, and I would love to have seen that play out. You know, I'd love to have seen how that character would have evolved and changed. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It would have been interesting to see one more story, you know, yep. 10 years down the line after that, but who knows? Maybe we'll get a graphic novel someday. You never know.
All right, what else have we got?
I think we're done with the voicemails, right?
Yep. We're done.
Right now, I'm going to ask Jeremy to show an image in the live stream, the live video stream, while I describe how inspired our fans can get. Laith Preston is actually a book reviewer over at Dragon Page, and he's a B5 fan. And he sent in this email saying, "Hey, all. I was listening to Babylon Podcast 257, the Feedback of Palooza, yesterday, and the image one of you threw out there of Summer hiding out in a government warehouse just stuck with me. Mm-hmm. So on lunch, I did a quick sketch of Summer's hideout." There's a sketch of literally the boxes that you'd see at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark all stacked up. And there's one in the middle that seems to have a cable hooked up to a satellite dish with a ladder very discreetly tucked away. So I've got my own personal secret crate as my hideout. When I have to go to ground, I know where the warehouse is. I have my own little personal hideout in there. And let's just say there is no crate on the, nothing happened in the crate on the top left corner today. For those who were asking, absolutely nothing happened regarding that crate on the top left of the picture. But I have to thank Laith for that, because that's just priceless. I don't know what to say to that. What do you say?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I love how your box is upside down. It says this way up and it's pointing down. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, classic misdirection. They're looking for me down there. I'm up here.
That's right.
Oh, I think that's a great thing to end on. That's awesome. That's actually the second sketch someone's done of me. If you remember back in the day, Darcy Lowe, our mm-hmm. teenage movie reviewer, she sent in sketches of Eliza, and I think she sent one in of me
mm-hmm.
that were just awesome. Very talented artist, that kid.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we have fun. We know how to have fun, damn it. Because we like Babylon 5.
It's fun to have fun, but you have to know how.
Yep. It's an art. It's an acquired skill, actually. Oh, but that will do it for our second helping of Double Mocha Chocolate Palooza Feedbackville. I think we've all caught up, at least as of today, right?
Yeah, I think we are.
So, one more time. The website is babylonpodcast.com. Come on by, check out the articles, the older episodes, and the live video feed, where you will have seen that sketch a little bit earlier than everybody else who sees it on the website. If you want to email in a question, a comment, a sketch, send that to babylonpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to record your own voicemails, like Edmund did, that's mm-hmm. the place to email them to. And, of course, our voicemail number is 206-338-2259.
Wow. That's
206-338-2259.
The year we all found out where Summer's really living.
And we'll see you on the other side of the secret government warehouse.